This is the Partnership Playbook, a podcast helping sales and marketing leaders secure high-value partnerships that finally unlock business growth and reclaim time. I'm your coach, Phil Hayes Sinclair. Welcome to the show.
Luke Reisman is the Senior Director of Partnerships at the PGA. And for somebody who enjoys golf but who is completely terrible at it, there has been an enormous amount of change happening in this sport over the last 10 years alone, including a pandemic and then the introduction of incredible technology and then the splitting of two of the major player groups, and then they've come back together again. And it's just an exciting sport to watch. And Luke, I'm really pleased to be talking to you today about all things global partnerships, because there's a lot happening in your world right now. Thanks for being here.
No, thank you for having me. Looking forward to getting into the conversation.
Well, let's just do right that. So, Luke, you have been with the PGA for some time. What was this story that brought you to golf and into this role in the first place?
Yeah, it's golf has always been a very, very, very important part of my life. It's when I was growing up, it's the way I spend time with my dad, the way I spend time with my brother, and golf, as opposed to other sports, you know, you're out there for 4 or 5 hours playing. You know, it's not like other activities where you're in and out for an hour. So you certainly get a lot of quality time. And it really was the way that we connected and bonded. So, you know, for me, even earlier in my career, when I was doing other things, I always had, you know, half an eye on getting into golf down the road. I played competitively when I got a little bit older. And then frankly, after 10 years or so on the agency side, a position opened up down here in Florida to lead the partnerships group at PGA of America. And within the game, you know, for those who pay really close attention to it, PGA of America is a pretty special organization, right? You have the top events and the Ryder Cup, PGA Championship. And then you also have, you know, 30,000 plus PGA members who are teaching the game on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So again, for like a golf junkie, a golf fanatic, a pretty special place for me to end up, and to be able to combine that with the commercial experience that I had in the previous job was really, really special and cool. So that's what brought me here. Nothing really prepared me for what the last decade in golf would look like. But it has been quite the journey, and certainly one I'm happy I took.
It's quite extraordinary. So let's talk first of all about how partnerships work in golf. So when somebody sees big brands associated with the sport, they see probably only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to all of the ecosystem that you're helping to manage and keep the plate spinning, because there's many, many things going on. Let's help the people listening and watching understand a bit more about what partnerships mean to the PGA.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, we will either approach a potential partner or they'll come to us. It happens both ways. They're trying to achieve some sort of objective in their business, maybe multiple objectives. But, you know, in some cases, it'll be a premier hospitality experience at some of our events. They'll want to host their biggest customers at a premier sporting event. For others, they'll want access to some of the best golf courses in the country, right? That could be a part of it. Others are looking to take advantage of a brand launch or run a bunch of media in a golf broadcast. And again, some of them are a combination of those things. So we'll have that conversation, obviously try and suss out what is most important to whoever we're talking to, and then build a partnership package that meets those objectives. So for our biggest partners, which are brands that I would assume most of your audience would have heard of, Rolex and BMW, T-Mobile, right? Some of the biggest brands in the world. We will put together a package for them that includes a bunch of those things. They'll get private hospitality for their key customers on site at our events. They'll have a broadcast media spend with our partners like CBS, ESPN, NBC. And in the end, the goal is to really stand out amongst their peers in a space where they know their customers are listening and watching, right? So if we're doing it right, that is certainly what we try to achieve through the partnerships that we put together.
And it's interesting because when you think about that sort of almost front of house, that is quite visible. We see the badges, we see the vehicles, we see the people. And then I guess in the last 10 years, at least, we've seen technology come into the game, which has been really quite mind-blowing in terms of the way that people who are not there can enjoy and consume and ultimately participate in a way they've never been able to do that before. And we're talking about, you know, things like the range finding technologies that used to be very manual. Then we've got the way that commentators can use all of the different things that help you understand just how far people are hitting and what the conditions are like. How does that now play into the way that your team thinks about providing that experience? Because if COVID taught us anything, it was, you know, it's great to get outdoors, but when you can't and you've got to experience something virtually, there's now a whole new way of doing that, which didn't exist maybe even 5 years ago.
There are so many examples of the way that things have changed. You know, there's one that we kind of point to all the time that has become second nature to golf fans who are watching, but it's pretty revolutionary if you look back. Like even a decade ago, when you're watching a golf broadcast, the cameras were shooting it like face on to the player, right? So you would see a swing, but you couldn't see where they were aiming. Just the introduction of TopTracer or TrackMan technology that kind of shows the shot shape has completely changed the way that golf appears on TV, right? And now it's second nature, where if you kind of go back and watch some of the old broadcasts, you're like, how did we even watch it that way before? Like, we had no idea where it was going. So it's even some of the things that have become, you know, organic in the way we watch golf. But so many other things too, right? When you're watching everything from our events to TGL to others, you know, especially the golf nerds can see everything from club head speed to ball speed, you know, every kind of stat that you would want. What it's done is made the consumer even more hungry to kind of get closer to the player. So we talk all the time about, you know, how what a consumer, a golf fan expects is to be able to watch the player that they want to watch hit just about every shot, right? Like there is, and at least have the ability to do that. Some, you know, some organizations have gotten closer to that than others, but that is absolutely the future, right? Where you can kind of consume the event in any way you want. What that's led to on the partnership side is that some of the partners that we're working with are trying to facilitate that sort of access, right? T-Mobile is a great example of that. Like, to get that kind of access and accessibility to the players, you need connectivity on site. You need connectivity at home. You need it to be fast. You need the latency to kind of go away. So, you know, whereas before, when things weren't as complicated from a technology perspective, that might not have been quite as critical. But now with all the pieces that you have to put together to give consumers that experience, you need brands like T-Mobile participating. And frankly, that was sort of the challenge, objective, whatever you want to call it, that led to our T-Mobile partnership in the first place.
It's funny because I've been to tournaments before where the amount of technology needed prior to the TrackMan style era was already massive.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of infrastructure to just broadcast one event was extraordinary. Now it's very, very different. I remember seeing some commentary from some of the big brand, big golf brand CEOs talking about how the game was really at the cusp of introducing a new level of inclusivity from a player point of view, introducing a new generation of people to the sport, people that never experienced a sport before. And surely things like TrackMan and other technologies have enabled that to become something you can play with friends if you've got something at home, or whether you're going to an indoor studio now. That was never a thing 5 years ago. How is that feeding into the demand for the sport?
We could spend hours on this topic alone. There are so many things that have changed the way that people play golf, right? There used to be this perspective from some of the golf organizing bodies and from some of the more conservative figures in the game that golf is only golf if you go play 18 holes, right? Like that's the only way you can define golf.
Very traditional.
Yeah. Right, incredibly traditional.
Yeah,
we don't think of it the same way when we think about basketball, right? Like if you go play pickup basketball in your driveway, you're still playing basketball, right? If you play horse, you're still playing basketball. So it took a little bit of like a mindset shift and things like Topgolf, right? Things like the technology that you're talking about, things like other new concepts in mini golf and other areas to kind of come along and be embraced by the gatekeepers of the game, right? To be able to allow other people to enter the game in different ways. And in the end, if you go to Topgolf and play for a half hour, if you go hit balls at the range, if you go putt with your kids, whatever it is, still playing golf, right? And eventually, our hope, especially as the organization that we are, and what's behind our mission, that eventually those guys, those people go play 18 holes of golf. Like, that's what we want. And so this whole feeder system that maybe didn't exist before is much more active than it was previously. And that has led to incredible increases in participation in the game. Especially, you know, it's almost like we look at COVID, and COVID had a role in that, right? When people were home and looking for social distancing things to do, golf was a pretty good one. We were worried that that would drop off as people start to return to normal life. It hasn't happened. And we think that one of the reasons for that is because of this whole feeder environment that has been created, that just creates a much larger universe of people potentially playing golf. So for us, all of these tech advancements have been positive as it relates to people participating.
Can we go back to how you, as a senior leader in this partnerships area, think about sizing up new partners that come to you? Because I'm sure that there are a number of partners that, you know, the inbound inquiries you would have would satisfy a certain number of criteria that are really great for the PGA. And your professional instinct will play a role to that. What are you looking for? And maybe what are you not looking for when it comes to people coming to you to say, hey, listen, here's our brand. We'd like to make this work. Not necessarily with naming names, but what is your framework for trying to assess that beyond the commercial upside that the PGA can benefit from?
Sure. I think the what we're not looking for is almost an easier one to answer. What we're not looking for is someone to write a check. Like, that's not who we are as a brand. That's not, you know, we need revenue, we need money, but that is not the driving factor behind the deals that we do. Because of who we are, the PGA of America's mission is to serve our members, that 30,000 that I was talking about before, who are teaching the game, growing the game, and then growing the game more broadly than that as well. That's our mission, right? So if we're looking at partners, we want them to be able to help us achieve one or both of those things. And I think when we look at our partner base, it's really easy to pick on a few examples that really do that. I kind of keep going back to T-Mobile because they're a good example of a lot of these things. But from a growing the game perspective, even just the fan environment on site at our events, you know, when we are running the Ryder Cup or we're running the PGA Championship, we're building a temporary city out on a golf course. And there is, you would imagine, like, your cell phone connectivity is not what it's supposed to be. You know, what it would be if you were just, you know, at your home or at your place of business. And so T-Mobile comes in with an incredible workforce and basically creates this connected environment for us that allows us to do all sorts of things that make the fan experience better on site. And, you know, in our mind, it maybe not directly, but indirectly growing the game of golf, because those people have a great experience and then they'll come back and watch again, or they'll go home and play, whatever it is. So that's one example. Another example close to home for us is Corebridge Financial. So they're a life insurance and retirement brand. And they actually run the PGA of America's retirement program for our members. Mm-hmm. I don't know how familiar your audience is with the team of 20, but at every PGA Championship, we have 20 PGA member professionals who qualify for the PGA Championship. So, you know, some people probably know the Michael Block story from a few years ago. He came through that qualifying process. And these guys are local club pros who qualify. And every once in a while, you get a Cinderella story like Block. Corebridge actually came in and we created a program with them where they sponsor that team. And get, you know, pay that team to participate in things. So give them additional funding to kind of make sure that their experience is great, give them other resources to help with their preparation and in the lead up to that event, and then highlight the team afterwards. So for us, it's a sponsor who's coming in and really looking at, like, what's most important and closest to our brand, and then getting behind that, right? So it's not just writing a check, it's finding that intersection between their objectives and our needs and blowing it out as much as they possibly can. So that's one of our favorites, because it's one that doesn't, you know, always get reported all the time. But when you get a story like Michael Block, there's a lot of exposure behind it, and it's really, really cool.
And when you think about the duration of those partnerships, do you typically enter into ones which are, I imagine, 3+ years, 5+ years, or are they ones which, because whenever we're coaching, I very strongly recommend that people in these kind of organizations never entertain anything less than 3 years, because it does take time to really find your feet with these kind of partnerships. What's your point of view on that?
It's hard to disagree with that. I mean, occasionally we'll have a partnership that's two, but that's really rare. I think, we have three is usually the bare minimum. We have partnerships that are, 8 to 10, a few of them. And those, those are ones where the fit has just been so good for so long that everybody kind of knows what they're signing up for. And we're lucky enough that even though the contracts that we've signed might only be 3 to 5 years, we have several partners who've been with us for 10, 15, 20, even 30 years. Our relationship with Pepsi is now going on, I believe, year 32. So way before my time. But it continues. And I think, I talk about this with my team all the time, that the testament to like a really successful partnership team are not the partners that you're bringing in. It's the partners that are sticking around. It's so much harder to go get a new partner than it is to keep somebody that's already in the fold. It makes it even more critical to make sure that those partners continue to renew. So, back to your question, I think 3 to 5 is probably the sweet spot, but occasionally we'll have some that run a little bit longer than that.
What do you find as some of the challenges with having a very significant pipeline of partners coming in? Because there's only so much space that you can have partners come into an organization like yours. And of course, they fit those two criteria you mentioned before. How do you manage the overflow from that? Is that, look, we can talk to you in 2 or 3 years' time and try and maintain that demand and interest? Or is there a different way that you think about managing that?
You're asking tough questions. On one hand, a lot of you mentioned this before, but like self-governing, I think, is part of it, right? As a revenue, commercially oriented professional to begin with, like it's hard to say no sometimes, but you certainly have to keep that in mind when you feel like it's getting too cluttered or too busy for the benefit of the overall partner family. That's certainly something that you need to think of. I think the other thing is like constantly be creating new assets and inventory so that you can offer your partners really clear swim lanes, or else they start stepping all over each other. So there's, what's nice, we're coming into a Ryder Cup year in New York and at Bethpage Black in September, and we'll have 6 or 7 global partners. It's our top level of partnership. And every one of them has a very clearly identifiable lane, right? So even though it's 6 or 7 partners participating in the same event, sitting alongside each other in signage, it's very easy to point and say, okay, Aon is all about Course Insights and the Nicholas Jacklin Award, which is, kind of a tradition award that we provide at the end of each Ryder Cup. Capgemini is all about outcome prediction. So if you're watching the broadcast on NBC, Capgemini has developed a tool that they can kind of tell you who you think is going to win a match at any point in time, right? So because there's very unique swim lanes, we hope that it doesn't feel like they're stepping on each other. And I think we've achieved that fairly successfully, but we always got to keep an eye on it, right? Because there does come a time where you're like, how do you give these brands the time, share a voice that they need to tell their story? So it is something we think about often.
Let me just double click on what you said about Capgemini there. That's fascinating. So, them bringing their native capability to make golf more accessible, fascinating. When you were thinking about that partnership with them, were they pitching that to you as a tool they would love to bring to the sport, or were they building that as part of a contingent of what was going to happen if they came into partnership with the PGA?
It's funny, there's been so many partnerships, it's hard to remember exactly how they happened at the beginning. But I think generally speaking, we knew that we were going to create a solution with them that was along those lines. It was, I don't know if it was exactly going to be that. It's funny. There's so many layers that go into all these things. We had to, think about wagering dynamics and some of the other things that went into that one too. But we knew that it was going to be something like that with them. And frankly, like they wouldn't have done the partnership with us if we weren't able to tell an authentic story like that. And they weren't able to showcase to their customers that they had brought something new and unique to the Ryder Cup. It's actually really nice. We developed that program together. And then there have been other broadcasters and properties who actually have approached Capgemini after to have them expand that tool to other things. So that's, I mean, that's a perfect story, right? Like that's exactly what they want to showcase. It's led to all sorts of new business for Capgemini because it's the intersection of their capabilities and golf fans. So when we're able to pull something else off like that, it's a cool thing.
It's well, and that's the essence of a great partnership, isn't it? Like if the benefit can flow both ways, I mean, we're doing a great job.
Sure.
Look, when it comes to the future of these partnerships, I mean, the idea of there being really long-term partnerships is probably quite unique to the sport and to this game. In the next decade, how are your team sort of foreseeing evolutions and transitions and change given what the last 10 years has been? I mean, we would all hope that we're not going to have this level of change going into the next 10 years that we had in the last 10 years, but I suspect that we should probably expect it. So what is it that your team is thinking about as you sort of look down the track 10 years?
I think a couple of things come to mind. One of them is the way that these partnerships are structured and like a demand for measurement and performance continues to, and you know, we've been in a relatively solid, positive economic cycle for several years now. But that will probably change at some point, right? So when that happens, and hopefully not too soon, but that will happen. And the focus on partners writing agreements that like there are performance demands for them continuing or for certain thresholds for spend, I think will continue, right? Like that will continue to get stronger and stronger. We have that in some of our deals to some degree, but I think that will continue to extend, especially in tougher economic conditions. I think that would certainly happen. Another one, and this is not rocket science by any means, but the exchange between traditional broadcast and social digital content, streaming, all that, like kind of that whole environment, I think partnerships will continue to shift towards the newer technologies and platforms, right? There's we see it now. I mean, broadcast is still incredibly important for us, and you know, the Ryder Cup on NBC, the PGA Championship on CBS and ESPN is always going to be the core. But especially when it comes to brand activation and storytelling, like a lot of those things can only come through branded content, custom content, and social platforms are the only way to do it. I also, you know, I keep waiting for it to kind of turn the corner on this. But we see more brands using influencers to tell their stories in our space than we've ever seen before. And there's so many golf influencers who are good at telling those stories that there's like no shortage of ways to go. Plus actually like activating influencers outside of the golf space to help tell those stories. It is almost every significant partner that we have is leaning into that space more than they ever have. So I would imagine like the structure of our deals and the focus of our deals will continue to evolve in that direction sooner than the next decade, probably in the next couple of years, but certainly in the next decade.
You know, it's interesting. Previously, it used to be sort of Sunday morning sport that you would tune into to get the recap on what's going on. And now there are golf podcasts on YouTube, on Twitch, coming across all the way into normal broadcast, which everyone can do. And when we saw some of the documentaries recently on Netflix, you would see some of these guys who are just golf fanatics who have built their own audience, who are now part of the normal, I guess, journalism staple for the PGA compared to what it used to be years ago.
Yeah, we just to show you how important this is becoming in all golf, but especially in our space, at the Ryder Cup, we are building, you know how they have Radio Row at the Super Bowl? We're building kind of Podcast Row. In our fan activation area, so that you know if there's whether they're brands who want to do their own things from a content creation or golf influencers who need to set up for an hour and report from the Ryder Cup, we are creating a space for that because it's necessary, right? Like if you want to reach, you know, the Ryder Cup's going to reach a pretty big audience no matter what, but if we want to reach the audience that we want to, we need to embrace these things. Even if they're not as tightly controlled sometimes as we would maybe hope, right? Because we can't tell our story exactly the way that we'd want to. It's how people are consuming this sport and consuming all sports. So we know we need to lean in, and we're going to do so under parameters that we feel comfortable with. But like we know we need to do it. And then on top of that, these influencers are just celebrities. So like there's the fans who are going to be coming on site to watch golf and, you know, and mess around in our partner activation areas and have a good experience with our partners might hang out and watch one of these podcasts for an hour in between golf, because these are, in some cases, they're almost as well known as the players themselves.
That's it.
So we are absolutely leaning in.
I love that. A couple more questions, Luke, before we wind up this morning. I wanted to quickly check in with, and we touched on this at the beginning, golf is a very rich in tradition sport, and there will be the people who have been around for a very long time, the old traditional members of clubs. And then we have this vast acceleration of technology. How do you think about bridging those two divides? Because, you know, at least in the Australian context, there are many old prestigious clubs which are struggling for traditional membership, player membership. Of course, you have PGA members who are there teaching the sport and doing the thing and bringing through the next generation. But how do you think about bridging that divide of the very traditional, the very well-dressed golfer, if you will, all the way through to the people who are just loving doing the weekend golf?
Yeah, we talk about this a lot internally, obviously, based on who we are. I think there's a place for everybody. Right. There is. We don't think those old historic traditional clubs are going anywhere. There will always be a place for those folks. But then there is certainly a place for the new wave as well. We have a I live here in South Florida, and we have a club that opened up several years ago called The Park in West Palm Beach, which is basically the other end of the spectrum from like those. They bring in music. They encourage walking all the time. They, you know, it's certainly more casual and fun. They encourage music. They like all, you know, all the stuff that you would expect. It's certainly a younger demographic. They have all sorts of junior programming, and that place is packed. And just like I'm sure Seminole is right around the corner, right? Like there's those places. And I think given golf's explosion, we think there's enough of a place for everybody. I think for us, as we think about it at our events, it's the same dynamic. Like how far do you lean in with commercialization of the event when golf, even, you know, people have been watching, you know, if you look back at baseball footage from, you know, 100 years ago, there's corporate signage all over the outfield. Like that exists. But if you watch golf tournaments, there wasn't. Like golf was traditionally sort of clean and uncluttered on the golf course. So we've had that same discussion on our side for years. Like how much do you lean into the commercialization of events? I think what we have generally decided for events is that as long as you don't mess with the field of play, right? Like as long as you keep the competition clean, right? Like generally fans are going have come to expect corporate sponsorship in a meaningful way. And especially if it's additive, if it's bringing stuff like the Capgemini outcome predictor and T-Mobile connectivity, like fans are going to embrace those sorts of things. When you get to a place where they impede on play, or, you know, or frankly piss off players or whatever it might be, that's when you start to get in trickier territory. I mean, I don't remember which event it was, but there was an event where, was distracted by a drone, right? And you know, that's always the area where we kind of worry about, right? Like, are you getting too close? Another one is as wagering starts to get closer and closer to the field of play, do you run into a situation where someone yelling in somebody's backswing or something can actually impact play. So like those, dynamic is what we're trying to navigate. But as long as we can stay away and keep the event itself clean and pure, I think at least from our perspective, we're willing to lean into doing some more creative things.
If there's a new partnership professional coming into your team, what are some of the things you're trying to and let's imagine this person is super green or has no idea about golf whatsoever. What are the kind of things you're trying to instill in them if they think that their future is going to be in golf, in partnerships, in growth? What are some of the qualities you would love them to know and to cultivate?
Yeah, it's good timing. We're actually interviewing for several positions now, so it's good timing. I think voracious consumption of the industry is to me as important as anything, especially when someone is green, and not just golf, frankly, probably not golf. Like there's, I think one of the things that's benefited me is that the start of my career was not golf. I was, it was college sports. It was, you know, American football. It was entertainment. It was music, movies. And for me, I know it served me well to be able to bring some of that type of thinking and experience to the job on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. I would hope for that from the people that we hire as well, that like you are just trying to consume every possible source of information about the industry that you can to make yourself as much of a utility player as you can be. Because you never really know where you're, you never really know where your career is going to take you. And on top of that, when it comes to us, we have a pretty diverse group of partners. On one hand, you have a Rolex, right? It sort of occupies one space. And then we have Michelob Ultra on the alcohol side, like a very, very different brand. And you need to be versatile enough to kind of be able to do either, right? Yeah. And that comes from just a like a deep understanding of sports partnerships in general that can only be gained through like working to consume it. So that, that to me is one. And then I think the second one is like a real creative open mind. You know, we've had a lot of conversations today about like the intersection of traditional versus fresh. And we have to lean into fresh. Like in general, like there's, you know, one of our old executives used to use the analogy that like, if we don't lean into innovative, like we're going to end up being Tower Records. Right. And we certainly don't want that. So I think when it comes to like, you know, this game, there still are conservative elements and it's kind of easy to fall into that trap of like, we haven't done it that way before. So for someone to kind of really come in and push the envelope, try and be innovative and thinking fresh about the things we could do, or is another one that I think is really critical when it comes to being successful in the industry.
Yeah, I do love that. Look, I've loved this conversation. I'm hoping that we can have more golf-related conversations in the future, because I think there's the evolution of this industry in particular is going to be massive. Let's finish off with our rapid-fire questions and then we can go from there. So here is the first of those five. Complete this sentence. Partnership is?
Compromise. Yeah, I was gonna say shared pain, but that's not a good answer.
Yeah, compromise is right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. What content are you loving at the moment?
I have a 3-year-old, so I'll give you golf content. But what I end up finding myself watching all the time is like Bluey and Disney Plus 99% of the time. But from a golf content perspective, I've really enjoyed Full Swing. I know it's kind of an easy answer, but
I do too.
Especially my wife is a big golf fan, but more of a casual fan, right? And the behind the scenes stories and access that you get from that is, you know, just like other things in celeb culture and life, being able to really understand what goes on behind the scenes is really, really cool.
I will say though that you've made my day by saying Bluey.
I wasn't even pandering to the. That is a fact.
Yeah. It is one of the world's greatest productions.
It is.
Now, what's the worst piece of advice you received and why?
Let me think. When I was younger in the industry, I remember somebody telling me that like it's one of the most important things is to self-merchandise, right? Like to make sure that everybody knows how you're killing it. Look, there's obviously a place for that. You need to make sure that you speak up for yourself. You need to make sure that that the right people are aware of what you're doing. But that is not how I want to live my life in this industry, right? Like I think I find it much more rewarding and better for the group as a whole when you're talking about the people who you work with, right? Like there's the people who are, I mean, if we've had any success on our side, it's only because of the people that I have had on my team who've been with me for a decade here and who you know, kind of live by the same values and kind of make the same types of decisions. So for me, like I would twist the self-merchandising to be like, talk about the people on your team, right? Like it's a much happier way for everybody to work and live too, besides the natural.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, couldn't agree more. When you see a potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
It's not dissimilar to the answer I just gave about like what advice I'd give to someone starting out in the industry. I think like research. Like when we've ended up on prospect calls and we don't understand the business of the brand that we're talking to, or we're not familiar with a new partnership that they just did, like we end up A, looking like idiots, and B, usually not closing the deal, right? I think it comes creative thinking that comes from the deepest possible understanding of the people that you're talking to.
Yeah, I get that. And finally, what's one thing you are deeply grateful for right now?
My family. This is too much information, but my wife and I were lucky after years of trying to be able to have a daughter, and she's three now. So, for me, in the context of the conversation that we're having, it makes me, even after a tough day on the partnership side, it's really nice to be able to come home and kind of have that waiting for me. So on the personal side, that's definitely it. On the professional side, I think it's more that just people love live sports more than ever. Like there's even in a world where people are consuming differently, like the way that people think about live sports is, if anything, it's only increased from a, success perspective. So lucky that we're in an industry that takes advantage of that.
Well, look, from one girl dad to another, and from one Bluey observer to another, thanks very much for spending the time today. It's been a real pleasure. And I think people are going to get a lot out of this episode.
My pleasure. It was a blast. Thanks so much.
Before you go, I have a quick question for you. Do you worry that you're wasting time, money, and credibility with the wrong partnerships? It's exhausting to pretend everything's fine while secretly worrying that you've made the wrong call. You see others thriving with the right connections, and you're stuck wondering if you're missing out on opportunities that could really elevate your business. Well, the good news is that ends today, because you can download my free partner calculator that instantly assesses if a partner is an ideal fit for your business. It'll give you the clarity and the confidence and the edge you've been looking for to secure high-value partnerships that not only finally unlock business growth, but also help you reclaim your time. The link is in the show notes. And I'm really glad you're here. I'm Coach Phil Hayes-Sinclair. I'll see you in the next episode.